The set text was prepared from the 1894 Chapman and Hall Christmas Stories edition by David Price. Email ccx074 at Coventry. Ack. Ugh. Dr. Marigold. I am a cheap jack, and my own father's name was Willem Marigold. It was in his lifetime supposed by some that his name was William, but my own father always consistently said, no, it was Willem. On which point I content myself with looking at the argument this way. If a man is not allowed to know his own name in a free country, how much is he allowed to know in a land of slavery? As to looking at the argument through the medium of the register, will a miracle come into the world before registers come up much, and went out of it too? They wouldn't have been greatly in his line neither, if they had chanced to come up before him. I was born on the Queen's Highway, but it was the King's at that time. A doctor was fetched to my own mother by my own father, when it took place on a common, and in consequence of his being a very kind gentleman, and accepting no fee, but a tea tray, I was named doctor, out of gratitude and compliment to him. There you have me, Dr. Marigold. I am at present a middle-aged man of a broadish build, in cords, leggings, and a sleeved waistcoat the strings, of which is always gone behind. Repair them how you will, they go like fiddle strings. You have been to the theater, and you have seen one of the violin players screw up his violin, after listening to it, as if it had been whispering the secret to him, that it feared it was out of order, and then you have heard it snap. That's as exactly similar to my waistcoat as a waistcoat, and a violin can be like one another. I am partial to a white hat, and I like a shawl round my neck wore loose and easy. Sitting down is my favorite posture. If I have a taste in point of personal jewelry, it is mother of pearl buttons. There you have me again, as large as life. The doctor having accepted a tea tray, you'll guess that my father was a cheap jack before me. You are right. He was. It was a pretty tray. It represented a large lady going along a serpentining uphill gravel walk, to attend a little church. Two swans had likewise come astray with the same intentions. When I call her a large lady, I don't mean in point of breadth, for there she fell below my views, but she more than made it up in eighth. Her eighth and slimness was in short the eighth of both. I often saw that tray, after I was the innocently smiling cause, or more likely screeching one, of the doctor standing it up on the table against the wall in his consulting room. Whenever my own father and mother were in that part of the country, I used to put my head. I have heard my own mother say it was flaxen curls at that time, though you wouldn't know an old hearth broom from it now till you come to the handle, and found it wasn't me, in at the doctor's door, and the doctor was always glad to see me, and said, aha, my brother practitioner. Come in, little M.D. How are your inclinations as to sixpence? You can't go on forever, you'll find, nor yet could my father, nor yet my mother. If you don't go off as a whole, when you are about to, you're liable to go off in part, and 2-to-1 your head's the part. Gradually my father went off his, and my mother went off hers. It was in a harmless way, but it put out the family where I boarded them. The old couple, though retired, got to be wholly and solely devoted to the cheap jack business, and were always selling the family off. Whenever the cloth was laid for dinner, my father began rattling the plates and dishes, as we do in our line, when we put up crockery for a bid, only he had lost the trick of it, and mostly let them drop and broke them. As the old lady had been used to sit in the cart, and hand the articles out one by one to the old gentleman on the footboard to sell, just in the same way she handed him every item of the family's property, and they disposed of it in their own imaginations from morning to night. At last the old gentleman, lying bedridden in the same room with the old lady, cries out in the old patter, fluent, after having been silent for 2 days and nights. Now here, my jolly companions every one, which the Nightingale Club in a village was held, at the sign of the Cabbage and Shears, where the singers no doubt would have greatly excelled, but for want of taste, voices and ears. Now, here, my jolly companions, everyone is a working model of a used-up old cheap jack, without a tooth in his head, and with a pain in every bone. So like life, that it would be just as good, if it wasn't better, just as bad, if it wasn't worse, and just as new, if it wasn't worn out. Bit for the working model of the old cheap jack, who has drunk more gunpowder tea with the ladies in his time than would blow the lid off a washerwoman's copper, and carry it as many thousands of miles higher than the moon as not nix not, divided by the national debt, carry nothing to the poor rates, three under, and two over. Now, my hearts of oak and men of straw, what do you say for the lot? 2 shillings, 1 shilling, 10 pence, 8 pence, 6 pence, 4 pence, 2 pence? Who said 2 pence? The gentleman in the scarecrow's hat? I am ashamed of the gentleman in the scarecrow's hat. I really am ashamed of him for his want of public spirit. Now I'll tell you what I'll do with you. Come. I'll throw you in the working model of a old woman that was married to the old cheap jack so long ago that upon my word and honor it took place in Noah's Ark before the unicorn could get in to forbid the banns by blowing a tune upon his horn. There now. Come. What do you say for both? I'll tell you what I'll do with you. I don't bear you malice for being so backward. Here. If you make me a bit that'll only reflect a little credit on your town, I'll throw you in a warming pan for nothing, and lend you a toasting fork for life. Now come, what do you say after that splendid offer? Say 2 pounds, say 30 shillings, say 1 pound, say 10 shillings, say 5, say 2 and 6. You don't say even 2 and 6? You say 2 and 3? No. You shan't have the lot for 2 and 3. I'd sooner give it to you, if he was good-looking enough. Here, missus, chuck the old man and woman into the cart, put the horse to, and drive him away and bury him. Such were the last words of Willem Marigold, my own father, and they were carried out, by him and by his wife, my own mother, on one and the same day, as I ought to know, having followed as mourner. My father had been a lovely one in his time at the cheap jack work, as his dying observations went to prove. But I top him. I don't say it because it's myself, but because it has been universally acknowledged by all that has had the means of comparison. I have worked at it. I have measured myself against other public speakers, members of parliament, platforms, pulpits, counsel learned in the law, and where I have found them good, I have took a bit of imagination from them, and where I have found them bad, I have let them alone. Now I'll tell you what. I mean to go down into my grave declaring that of all the callings ill used in Great Britain, the cheap jack calling is the worst used. Why ain't we a profession? Why ain't we endowed with privileges? Why are we forced to take out a hawker's license, when no such thing is expected of the political hawkers? Where's the difference betwixt us? Except that we are cheap jacks and they are dear jacks, I don't see any difference but what's in our favor. For look here. Say it's election time. I am on the footboard of my cart in the marketplace, on a Saturday night. I put up a general miscellaneous lot. I say, now here, my free and independent voters, I'm a going to give you such a chance as you never had in all your born days, nor yet the days preceding. Now I'll show you what I am a going to do with you. Here's a pair of razors that'll shave you closer than the Board of Guardians. Here's a flat iron worth its weight in gold. Here's a frying pan artificially flavored with essence of beefsteaks to that degree that you've only got for the rest of your lives to fry bread and dripping in it, and there you are replete with animal food. Here's a genuine chronometer watch in such a solid silver case that you may knock at the door with it when you come home late from a social meeting and rouse your wife and family and save up your knocker for the postman. And here's half a dozen dinner plates that you may play the cymbals with to charm baby when it's fractious. Stop. I'll throw in another article, and I'll give you that, and it's a rolling pin. And if the baby can only get it well into its mouth, when its teeth is coming, and rub the gums once with it, they'll come through double, in a fit of laughter equal to being tickled. Stop again. I'll throw you in another article, because I don't like the looks of you, for you haven't the appearance of buyers, unless I lose by you, and because I'd rather lose than not take money tonight, and that's a looking glass in which you may see how ugly you look when you don't bid. What do you say now? Come. Do you say £1? Not you, for you haven't got it. Do you say 10 shillings? Not you, for you owe more to the tallyman. Well then, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. I'll heap 'em all on the footboard of the cart, there they are. Razors, flat watch, dinner plates, rolling pin, and away for 4 shillings, and I'll give you 6 pence for your trouble. This is me, the cheap jack. But on the Monday morning, in the same marketplace, comes the dear jack on the hustings his cart, and, what does he say? Now my free and independent voters, I am a-going, to give you such a chance, he begins just like me, as you never had in all your born days, and that's the chance of sending myself to Parliament. Now I'll tell you, what I am a-going to do for you. Here's the interests of this magnificent town promoted above all the rest of the civilized and uncivilized earth. Here's your railways carried, and your neighbor's railways jockeyed. Here's all your sons in the post office. Here's Britannia smiling on you. Here's the eyes of Europe on you. Here's universal prosperity for you, repletion of animal food, golden cornfields, gladsome homesteads, and rounds of applause from your own hearts, all in one lot, and that's myself. Will you take me as I stand? You won't? Well then, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. Come now. I'll throw you in anything you ask for. There. Church rates, abolition of more malt tax, no malt tax, universal education to the highest mark, or universal ignorance to the lowest, total abolition of flogging in the army, or a dozen for every private once a month all round, wrongs of men or rights of women only say which it shall be, take 'em or leave 'em, and I'm of your opinion altogether, and the lot's your own on your own terms. There. You won't take it yet. Well then, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. Come. You are such free and independent voters, and I am so proud of you, you are such a noble and enlightened constituency, and I am so ambitious of the honor and dignity of being your member, which is by far the highest level to which the wings of the human mind can soar, that I'll tell you what I'll do with you. I'll throw you in all the public houses in your magnificent town for nothing. Will that content you? It won't? You won't take the lot yet? Well then, before I put the horse in and drive away, and make the offer to the next most magnificent town that can be discovered, I'll tell you what I'll do. Take the lot, and I'll drop £2,000 in the streets of your magnificent town for them to pick up that can. Not enough? Now look here. This is the very furthest that I'm a-going to. I'll make it 2,500. And still you won't? Here, Miss Sis. Put the horse no, stop half a moment, I shouldn't like to turn my back upon you neither for a trifle, I'll make it £2,750. There. Take the lot on your own terms, and I'll count out £2,750 on the footboard of the cart, to be dropped in the streets of your magnificent town for them to pick up that can. What do you say? Come now. You won't do better, and you may do worse. You take it? Hooray! Sold again, and got the seat. These dear jacks soak the people shameful, but we cheap jacks don't. We tell them the truth about themselves to their faces, and scorn to court 'em. As to venturesomeness in the way of puffing up the lots, the dear jacks beat us hollow. It is considered in the cheap jack calling that better patter can be made out of a gun than any article we put up from the cart, except a pair of spectacles. I often hold forth about a gun for a quarter of an hour, and feel as if I need never leave off. But when I tell them what the gun can do and what the gun has brought down, I never go half so far as the dear Jacks do when they make speeches in praise of their guns, their great guns, that set them on to do it. Besides, I'm in business for myself. I ain't sent down into the marketplace to order, as they are. Besides, again, my guns don't know what I say in their laudation, and their guns do, and the whole concern of 'em have reason to be sick and ashamed all round. These are some of my arguments for declaring that the cheap jack calling is treated ill in Great Britain, and for turning warm when I think of the other jacks in question setting themselves up to pretend to look down upon it. I courted my wife from the footboard of the cart. I did indeed. She was a Suffolk young woman, and it was in Ipswich Marketplace right opposite the corn chandler's shop. I had noticed her up at a window last Saturday that was appreciating highly. I had took to her, and I had said to myself, if not already disposed of, I'll have that lot. Next Saturday that come, I pitched the cart on the same pitch, and I was in very high feather indeed, keeping them laughing the whole of the time, and getting off the goods briskly. At last I took out of my waistcoat pocket a small lot wrapped in soft paper, and I put it this way, looking up at the window where she was. Now here, my blooming English maidens, is an article, the last article of the present evening's sale, which I offer to only you, the lovely Suffolk dumplings piling over with beauty, and I won't take a bit of £1,000 for from any man alive. Now what is it? Why, I'll tell you what it is. It's made of fine gold, and it's not broke, though there's a hole in the middle of it, and it's stronger than any feather that ever was forged, though it's smaller than any finger in my set of 10. Why 10? Because, when my parents made over my property to me, I tell you true, there was 12 sheets, 12 towels, 12 tablecloths, 12 knives, 12 forks, 12 tablespoons, and 12 teaspoons, but my set of fingers was too short of a dozen, and could never since be matched. Now what else is it? Come, I'll tell you. It's a hoop of solid gold, wrapped in a silver curl paper, that I myself took off the shining locks of the ever-beautiful old lady in Threadneedle Street, London City. I wouldn't tell you so, if I hadn't the paper to show, or you mightn't believe it even of me. Now what else is it? It's a man trap and a handcuff, the parish stocks and a leg lock, all in gold and all in one. Now what else is it? It's a wedding ring. Now I'll tell you what I'm a going to do with it. I'm not a going to offer this lot for money, but I mean to give it to the next of you beauties that laughs, and I'll pay her a visit tomorrow morning at exactly half after 9 o'clock as the chimes go, and I'll take her out for a walk, to put up the bands. She laughed, and got the ring handed up to her. When I called in the morning, she says, oh dear, it's never you, and you never mean it? It's ever me, says I, and I am ever yours, and I ever mean it. So we got married, after being put up 3 times, which, by the by, is quite in the cheap jack way again, and shows once more how the cheap jack customs pervade society. She wasn't a bad wife, but she had a temper. If she could have parted with that one article at a sacrifice, I wouldn't have swapped her away in exchange for any other woman in England. Not that I ever did swap her away, for we lived together till she died, and that was 13 years. Now, my lords and ladies and gentlefolks all, I'll let you into a secret, though you won't believe it. 13 years of temper in a palace would try the worst of you, but 13 years of temper in a cart would try the best of you. You are kept so very close to it in a cart, you see. There's thousands of couples among you getting on like sweet isle upon a whetstone in houses 5 and 6 pairs of stairs high, that would go to the divorce court in a cart. Whether the jolting makes it worse, I don't undertake to decide. But in a cart it does come home to you, and stick to you. Violence in a cart is so violent, and aggravation in a cart is so aggravating. We might have had such a pleasant life. A roomy cart, with a large goat hung outside, and the bed slung underneath it when on the road, an iron pot and a kettle, a fireplace for the cold weather, a chimney for the smoke, a hanging shelf and a cupboard, a dog and a horse. What more do you want? You draw off upon a bit of turf in a green lane, or by the roadside. You hobble your old horse, and turn him grazing. You light your fire upon the ashes of the last visitors. You cook your stew, and you wouldn't call the Emperor of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.